The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
World Cup Daily, day two in South Africa, and it's Saturday night FIFA as at Royal Bafokeng Stadium. Rob Green proves Royal Bafokeng awful in Anglo-US 1-1 draw. We get the reaction from Rustenburg and from the other day two matches on a day when Heinze got a win in the can for Argentina and Greece, just like at the World Bank, emerged with no credit. Then it's on to Sunday's games. We hear what's in store as Desert Foxes Algeria face Slovenia, ask if Ghana-Serbia will produce the tournament's first African win, and whether Australia's clash with Germany will give us the first big upset. All that and more in today's World Cup Daily. Yes, day two then, and joining us here in the World Cup Daily pod, first off, hello, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Previously involved in the production, but in a behind-the-scenes role.
Indeed.
All right, a little bit of the glory for you tonight then. Big, fat helping of glory for Barry Glendening, who's fresh, fingers bleeding from a minute by minute on that extraordinary, extraordinary day two match at Rustenburg, England 1, USA 1.
Yep, my fingers are aching to the bone.
Yes, indeed they're...
Like I'd imagine Rob Green's are.
Yes, or those are the people who have been pressing fingers into his neck and shaking them violently. Apropos of this being World Cup Daily, it has come to our attention that there may be some lucky listeners who are actually receiving another similarly titled production, which features, who's it feature? Mark Chapman is the BBC one. Anyway, what should they do, Producer Ben, if they receive that? Unsubscribe, there you go. Then you'll just get ours. Which is obviously what you want. Absolutely. It was a crazy day. ITV Digital missed a goal. Rob Green missed the other. We have been kind of touting for headlines and that. And, well, plenty of people went with the English spill thing. Barry, what was yours?
Well, mine was a collaboration with someone who emailed me, Green disaster as Americans revel in English spill.
Yes. US enjoys another English spill. BB, not the only British spill. It's all good stuff. It's all good stuff, of course, unless you're an England fan. We'll get on to the England game of what it means or what it doesn't mean for their World Cup prospects and for the US team as well in a second or two. First off, though, let's get the day's news headlines.
Bong.
Spain midfielder Andres Iniesta sat out training Saturday, but is expected to return for Spain's second game of the tournament against Honduras. Meanwhile, Arwen Robben, in other injured midfielder news, has arrived in South Africa and joined up with the Dutch squad in time for his next injury in Tuesday's opener with the Danes.
Bong.
Problems for Algeria. England's next opponent saw their captain Yazid Manzouri walk out of the team in a dressing room row. The 32-year-old midfielder, upset at being dropped, stormed off to his hotel room and was packing his bags before desperate team officials persuaded him to unstick them from his manager's bollocks.
Bong.
And Italy's Gennaro Gattuso says he'll retire from international football after this World Cup. I want to make way for younger players, explained Gattuso, who's one of an ageing Italy squad. I've already got plenty to tell my grandkids about, although frankly they're getting a little old for that. Crikey. England-USA then. What a beginning. Jacob, you're a West Ham fan. How did you feel about Rob Green's performance?
I had a bet with Barry that Rob Green would start, and I think I told him before the game that he wouldn't make a fool of himself. So I feel that maybe I should give back the £5 that he gave me.
Yes,
but it's hard to explain how someone who is one of the best goalkeepers in the world, because he is, he's the England goalkeeper. Therefore, he is one of the best goalkeepers in the world.
I'm sure that those aren't mutually exclusive definitions.
Okay, but well, by definition, he would be, because, okay, Iker Casillas, Petr Cech, for example, but he is at his profession, one of the best in the world. How does he make that mistake?
All right, well, this is curious, because Opta Joe, according to him, Rob Green made more errors leading to goals than any other player in the Premier League last season. As a West Ham fan,
well, there was one against Bolton where we were drawing 1-1 at Bolton in last December, and there was a very easy shot straight at him from outside the area, and he just patted it down, flapped it straight to Klasnic, who took it round him and tapped it into an empty net. So this was somewhat reminiscent of what he did tonight.
But tonight's was even worse. It was reminiscent of Massimo Taibbi, we were saying, that famous Manchester United howler. But I think even worse. Would you care to describe for anyone who didn't have the pleasure of watching it?
Well, Clint Dempsey took a speculative shot from about 25 yards out. It wasn't hit particularly hard. The ball didn't fizz in the air or swerve. It wasn't down to the controversial Jabulani ball. It bounced twice, and Green sort of hunkered down to catch it in his, you know, palms, and somehow contrived to knock it sort of under behind him and under his arms, and then dived in horror as it squirmed over the line.
When it first deflected off, it was travelling so slowly, I was convinced that he would be able to scramble back on all fours and still retrieve the situation. But no.
No, I mean, it was an absolute shocking mistake to make, and you won't see a worse goalkeeping rick in this tournament.
I can
confidently predict that.
Yeah. Let's now get the reaction of someone who was actually in the Royal Bafokeng Stadium for this match of matches, Owen Gibson. Owen, there's an air of rampant negativism here in the pod. What's the perspective there from Ground Zero?
Fairly gloomy as well, I think. Feels a bit Groundhog Day-ish, I think, is the general mood that we've all feel about, like we've been here before, and Fabio Capello, from being a manager who everyone thought every decision he made came good, as he's turned into a manager where every decision he makes seems to go the other way.
All right, let's hear about those bad decisions. Which was the worst one?
Well, I suppose you could question. I suppose the goalkeeper was unlucky rather than necessarily a poor decision. But he used to be a lucky general, didn't he? And and of late, it seems that every way he turns, he meets either misfortune or you could say kind of enforced problems. I think, you know, Ledley King, you could question the decision to take him and play him, given that he didn't play particularly well in the warm-up matches, particularly against Mexico, and obviously carrying this injury that means he can't train, and then for him to go off with another injury, you're going to question that. And all in all, decisions that were going his way just don't seem to be, and that's got to be worrying.
Owens, Barry here. A lot of the tabloid hacks and a lot of the broadsheet hacks have been bigging up England's chances all week, touting them as potential World Cup winners. What's the mood in the press room now that they've pretty much demonstrated they're anything but?
Oh, no doubt they'll swing completely the other way, won't they? And then we'll scrape a win against Algeria, and probably they'll swing right back again. I mean, you know, you're right to say that neither end of the scale is the right one. But I suppose the England camp don't help themselves either, do they? I mean, Capello for the obligatory, if we don't get to the final, it'll be a failure. Joe Cole, who I wonder what his thoughts were tonight watching Sean Wright Phillips come on. But, you know, he did the obligatory, we can win it. And everyone just seems to revert to type, really. And it just feels a bit like we've been here before.
From where you were sitting, what was the stadium like, bedecked as it was with flags and banners and all sorts of exciting things?
Well, I mean, we heard, didn't we, before the kickoff, that more tickets have been sold to American fans. There were a lot of American fans outside, but once we got in, it was clear that, you know, England fans were dominating probably 4-1. I think that's probably largely because a lot of South Africans were also supporting England. The atmosphere was good, although it was slightly odd. It didn't feel like an opening match between two, you know, a much hyped up opening match in a World Cup, in a sense. I think partly because of the you couldn't hear any of this. There's none of the songs or chanting that was normally there because people were inexpertly blowing their vuvuzelas, and the England band were doing their usually annoying thing. So it felt slightly odd. Big sort of open bowl, but the stadium was, you know, it's really an impressive stadium. It's kind of when you sort of come across it in the middle of the bush, it's quite an arresting sight, and everyone was having a really good time before the games, sort of, you know, mixing, drinking from impromptu bars that have been set up by enterprising locals, and, you know, the atmosphere was generally good, but for phases of the game, it went quite flat, because largely because nothing of note was happening on the pitch, I think, you know, and the American fans were certainly louder by the end, I think.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Well, apart from Rob Green, did England look good? Not according to Stoppinger, who says, new manager, new tournament, same old England. Win ball, hoof up to Heskey, lose ball. ITV's commentators kept banging on about how many times Heskey had won the ball. But why does it matter whose head the ball ricochets wildly off anyway? I'm not having a go at Heskey himself, he says, having a go at Heskey himself. But anyway, he's not very impressed. Barry, were you?
No. We were accused of being excessively negative about England in the pod last week. And I think tonight showed that far from being negative, we were just being realistic. And if anything, we were being kind. They were absolutely terrible tonight.
Do you think so?
Yeah, totally. Hess, on ITV, Clive Tilsley and Andy Townsend were praising Heskey to the high heavens as if he was Pele. And I mean, and I think expectations from him are now so low that just by, you know, the ball is hoofed his way, and if he wins a header, he's a great, great player.
Wait,
you could hammer a Heskey-sized wooden stake into the opposition penalty area, and it would contribute pretty much just as much. The odd ball would ricochet off it. It might bounce kindly for Lampard.
He set Gerrard up for the opener very nicely, and at that point, England looked very much in control. I'm not sure. Was it when Green committed his howler that things began to unravel for England? Or was the damage already done by Capello's team selection? Because genius manager already had to make two substitutions by half-time, which is never a good sign.
Well, I think that I don't agree with Barry. I don't think they were terrible. I think that there's might be an overreaction there. I think they had the majority of the play. They had the best chances. If you look at it, they gifted the goal to USA. And only the Altidore shot, which Green saved, was the other one. Apart from that, you know, England had the best chances. And okay, if you were to look at that display, you'd say they're not going to win the World Cup. But I don't think that we should be too negative about it.
Mm.
But why not? Because look at their opposition. They have two centre halves in there, Carragher and John Terry, who were made turned inside out and repeatedly skinned by a player who can't get a game for Hull and a player who plays for the Utah Saints or, you know,
Rail Salt Lake.
Whoever. They're the band. But they didn't show much in the way going forward.
That's true.
Rooney wasn't brought into the game.
Mm.
And I would imagine the players of Slovenia and Algeria were watching that in their hotels and will be laughing up their sleeves and will sleep very, very soundly in their beds tonight. I mean, both teams tonight will be disappointed they didn't win. Both teams will be relieved they didn't lose. And so a draw was probably the fair result. But England were very, very unimpressive. And I think to suggest that performance was in any way good is just delusional.
Well, both teams tonight may get more comforting news from tomorrow's performances from Algeria and Slovenia. But in the meantime, it's only the first game. What, though, from the US perspective, there were some very promising performances there. I have to say, I was amazed by Onyewu, who everyone had been saying he's only played 30 minutes all season, etc. And he was a rock.
Well, he was beaten repeatedly in the air by Heskey. So him and Demerit were in the centre of defence. And Heskey won most of the balls that came into him, but didn't do anything with them, didn't direct them towards Rooney, you know. And I don't know, you know, I thought Landon Donovan was very good for the States. Bocanegra was made look excellent. He's an old man at this stage. He's old and slow, but he did fine.
Howard was great.
Howard played well. Actually, sorry, going back to Heskey, he had that gilt-edged opportunity to put England further ahead, or 2-1 up, and threw on goal and shot straight at Howard.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Jay Demerit. I'm just wondering, we could have an ongoing competition for the most appropriate surname in the World Cup. Jay Demerit, probably right up there. I know producer Ben wants to mention Danny Schisser at this point, but that's a bit unpleasant. Odia, the player who left Gabriel Heinz unmarked for the Argentina goal winner earlier on Saturday, probably Rod Green in his own way would qualify there. Well, I tell you what, there's going to be bags more time to talk about the US and England as the tournament progresses. Elsewhere on Saturday, South Korea took on Greece, and yay! Greece, great to see them maintaining their perfect record. That's now four games, is it, in the World Cup played? Four games lost, 12 goals conceded and none scored. Plenty of people tweeting in headlines for this match. I don't know if you saw it, either of you, did you?
I thought Greece, to their credit, if they achieved anything today, they're worse than England. They made England look good. They were absolutely dismal. My dark horses for the tournament, as I said in the video we recorded a few days ago, was Greece.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Twitch Hut says the Greeks have lost their marbles. Dian Wong has Greek bus gets parked, which works on so many levels. I like the Guardian headline online, which was Football Bloody Hellas. And a nice one as well from Lee Hoodoo Guru, who says, if they continue to play like this, Acropolis Chow. Nice, that one. Yes, then later on Saturday, Argentina. We got our first look at the Argentines. So much mystery about their real worth in this tournament, given the talent at their disposal, but their poor qualifying record. Verdict?
They were good. Messi was fantastic, and that's, for me, was one of the highlights of the day. And but they missed so many chances, and eventually they tired, and that defence, for me, is just not good enough to win a World Cup. Gutierrez early on was turned by, I think it was Obasi, after about 3 minutes when it was still 0-0. And it was, I don't know why he's playing right back if he can't defend, if he can't stand up to a man like that.
Yeah. It's not a question I can answer, sadly, Jacob. What did you make of the Argentina physical coach bloke saying that Messi was irrevocably knackered by the season?
It didn't seem like it.
No, it didn't. If that's him knackered, as yeah. Sean Ingle put it, yeah. Lord help us when he gets into his stride. Well, if he was the key man then for Argentina, might I suggest that the key man for Nigeria was their goalkeeper, Barry?
Yeah, he played very well. Someone on the comments thread under...
No.
Yeah.
You promised, Barry.
I didn't rise to the bait.
Yeah.
But somebody criticised me for saying, and they quoted me saying that African goalkeepers were naive, which is not what I said. I said no. African goalkeepers were rubbish.
Right.
And that was based on what I saw in the African Cup of Nations, right, where I watched a lot of games, and almost to a man, apart from the Egyptian keeper, the goalies were really terrible, making... dropping clangers like Robert Green's. But the Nigerian keeper, Annie Aimer, kept his side in the game. And, as it progressed, there was only the kick of a ball in it. And Nigeria could have equalised. It was remarkable that there was only one goal in that game because there were so many good chances.
All right. Well, jury's still out then on Argentina, who look like having South Korea as their only real rivals, I suspect, in Group B. People posting to our inaugural World Cup daily. Frankie Fear says that there's been a lot of mudslinging at South Africa, and in all fairness, the country is at the moment full of thieves, drug dealers and perverts. Still, when John Terry goes back to England and takes his family with him, the situation will improve. Lawyers, no. Okay. All right, then. Excellent. Well, Saturday was absolutely thrilling. And Sunday, well, has the potential to be equally dramatic. Let's have a look at what there is on our dance card. Algeria taking on Slovenia. Slovenia is, I'm sure you know, Jacob, with a population of only 2 million, one of the five smallest nations ever to play in a World Cup finals. Now, everyone tells me that Algeria are really, really bad. As we heard earlier, their captain tried walking out. They've also lost Ziani, the bloke who scored that spectacular goal against Egypt in the qualifying playoff. He's out, injured, I believe. Algeria, one of the reasons everyone says that Algeria are rubbish is until they beat the United Arab Emirates earlier this month, they'd had a run of four consecutive defeats without scoring, which is probably why everyone's a bit down on them. Also coming up on Sunday, Serbia-Ghana. Serbia, excitingly enough, have prepared for the tournament with a 1-0 defeat to New Zealand, which saw rioting by their own fans.
Not probably the best preparation, but no. I'm doing this game tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that.
Are you? What are you looking forward to about it?
I'm looking forward to seeing Serbia play. I think they could be one of the dark horses of this tournament. In the last Euros, we saw Croatia beat Germany in the group stage and finish top, so I feel that could be a repeat on the cards with Serbia. They've got Vidic and Ivanovic and Krasic, who I've seen is linked with Juventus at the moment.
And currently it's CSKA Moscow.
And Ivanovic is going to Liverpool. And Ghana without Essien.
Yes, so the Ghana side, it's not packed with experience. Essien, as you say, is out. They've got a lot of the youngsters from the under-20 World Cup winning side from last October, which is a very exciting prospect. But do you think they have a better chance than South Africa and Nigeria, the two teams we've seen so far, of actually notching a first African win in this tournament?
Of course. I mean, Ghana are a good side, and they did well in the last tournament, the last World Cup. And then I thought they were unlucky to actually go out to Brazil, because they played very well and they were one of the best, most entertaining sides of that World Cup. So I'm hoping it's going to be similar tomorrow.
Well, it certainly must be a step up from Serbia's last World Cup outing, which, as you recall, was utterly disastrous. They lost all their games, didn't they? Mm. They certainly got tonked 6-0 by Argentina.
Well, they were meant to be good in that World Cup as well,
yes.
Serbia. So my dark horse shout could be proved very, very foolish.
Well, it's early days, Jacob. You know, we're all making wild predictions and, you know, you win some, you lose some.
It's no Greece.
Magnificent. Now, the showcase fixture of Sunday's action is, of course, Germany's clash with Australia in Durban. I believe we're now joined on the line by Neil Sherwin, the infamous creator of BackpageFootball.com, Australia's leading go-to site for news and views on football. Neil, are you there?
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm very well. Is it 5 a.m. with you?
Just kicking on 6.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough then. All right. Well, you've probably got a busy Sunday ahead of you with all the World Cup stuff. Are you excited about tonight's big clash?
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole country is looking forward to it at this stage. The excitement 4 years ago really set a precedent for Australia, having not been in it for so long before. And there's a lot of optimism. And also, well, a slight bit of pessimism as well, given the fact that so many of the players in the squad are on their last legs, as it were, at international level. So it's really make or break for Australia. So there's a lot of hope and expectation. But on the other side of that as well, it's a tough group, three difficult games. So, yeah, if it goes pear-shaped, we'll read all about it.
Yeah, it's a golden generation, isn't it? And this is their last chance of glory. It sounds eerily familiar. 2006 was a phenomenal tournament that ended in tragic circumstances, obviously, for Australia. There are players who dropped out of that of the team since 2006. Has there been anything coming in? Has the standard fallen, or is it even better now than the 2006 Socceroos?
It's not too much different. The big difference, obviously, is, well, Viduka is no longer with the squad, and he added a lot up front along with Aloisi. They were able to rotate, whereas this time round, Australia's gone with basically Josh Kennedy and Nikita Rukavica, who's a 22-year-old who's playing state league football 3 or 4 years ago. So up front, the options are limited, much more so than they were 4 years ago. The good news is really that the 14 of the squad have played together in 2006, so they're back together as a unit. They've been there and done it before, so they have the experience, and they can definitely go through the group. It's just a case of where the goals are going to come from. They don't leak too many, so I don't expect high scoring games. But yeah, if Fuel is fit and Bresciano and Emerton, they've always got a chance of creating from midfield, and of course it's Tim Cahill as well, who we all know is capable of finding the back of the net any time.
Neil, it's Barry here. I was just wondering, could you tell the class which Australian enclave of Dublin you're from? That seems to be a very Irish accent you have.
Yeah, I was. I was born in Perth originally to Irish parents, and I grew up there, and I've since moved back out. So, dual citizen. So I've only got one team to root for in this World Cup, unfortunately.
You mentioned Tim Cahill. How is his neck?
Yeah, he's fine. He's good to go. Said he's looking forward to it, and yeah, himself, Jewel, and Emerton have been training in the last day or two. So it's a massive boost for the squad to have those guys in, because they really are the creative force in midfield. If you take that away, you've got Jason Tolina, who's a decent player, but after that you're looking at Richard Garcia, who hasn't performed very well, and Vince Grella, who's just a holding midfielder. So if you look outside the starting 11, there aren't a lot of options to come in, especially young players. There's only five of the squad under the age of 25, so looking forward, it's not the most encouraging, but with those guys ready to go, ready to go against Germany, and the Germans are always going to be a good side, big, strong. The loss of Balak is obviously a bonus, but they've got more than enough players to come in and replace them. So I think the squad are ready. They know what they're going to be up against. As I said, they've been in zone 4 years ago, so it's not exactly new territory for them either.
Neil, I heard Lucas Neal talking today, and he was remarkably humble for a shackle dragger. He was saying Germany are a better team. Pretty much conceding that Australia were probably going to lose the match and would go out and give it a bit of a lash, but would it probably lose because they were vastly inferior to the Germans. What the hell has gone wrong with Australians?
It's not the typical air of arrogance you normally hear when it comes to sporting events. Australia like the back winners, and those sort of comments aren't going to do the public relations much of a favour, because it's very much a confidence thing for Australians to be supporting the winner, and there's so many options there with other sports as well, that if the soccer team don't perform well, they can just go and watch AFL or rugby league, or there's plenty of alternatives. So I guess he's just trying not to build up the hype too much, because, as I said, with the Golden Generation, as it's been dubbed in various quarters, it is their last opportunity to do well. And if they don't, it's going to be a tough break for the country, especially with them trying to get to host the World Cup down the road.
Neil, they're going to be playing for a draw, yes? Is it going to be kind of a gritty defensive spectacle? Should we be wasting our Sunday night watching it?
I think it might not be one for the purists, but I do think it will be an interesting game tactically. They'll most likely go with the one up front, Kennedy, so it will look slightly negative. But having said that, there's plenty of attacking prowess in midfield with Bresciano and Kiel, and who can create something out of nothing. So I think it'll be an interesting affair. The Germans have a lot of firepower up front. I think Kennedy will cause problems. He's very much in the Peter Crouch mold. Scores goals in Japan in the league over there. So he's a decent striker. Could cause problems, and he hopefully can bring Kale into the game a lot.
Quite a shock there. I was sort of surprised. I was expecting, you know, good eye, fair dinkum, right. And then yeah. He sounds like he's from Robbie Keane territory.
Well, it's a nation that embraces people from all over the globe, Australia.
Apart from their own.
Now, I've got a note here. Soccer, the Australians must play with conviction, not traditionally a problem for them, as they take on Germany. It's their 17th tournament, of course, the Germans. Why does nobody mention the Germans, Jacob, as among the favourites? You know, they've got Podolski and Klose are always scoring goals. They don't concede goals.
But Podolski and Klose have not had a great season.
Mm.
But then I don't think they'd had a great season going into a couple of past tournaments, had they?
You might be right.
Well, I drew Germany in the office sweep and was more than happy with that.
Yeah, it's the youngest squad the Germans have sent to a World Cup for 76 years. And, of course, Michael Ballack's absence helps that. They do have one or two areas of inexperience, particularly the keeper, you know, such a crucial thing, as we saw Saturday evening, the keeper. Manuel Neuer, that's no doubt completely the wrong way to say it, but he was the keeper for their European Under-21 Championship side, which featured, of course, Mesut Özil, who Rafael Honigstad's always going on about being the next big thing.
He's got him in his fantasy team.
Has he?
Yeah.
You've seen Rafael's team?
I have, and he's been banging on about on Twitter.
Has he? Who else has Rafael got on his side?
I'm not sure. He invited a few people to play in his fantasy league, but you have to pay to enter.
Ooh, so, that does sound like Rafael, Okay. Very, very good. That's it, then, for today's World Cup Daily. There'll be another one, of course, tomorrow at a similar time as we look back on Sunday's action. And yes, forward to Monday. What does Monday include? I don't have a...
I love the way you spring these questions on
us. I spring them on myself.
Hold on, Russell.
Here, I've got it here. Right, schedule.
We've got Holland, Denmark, Japan, Cameroon, and Italy.
All right.
Taking on the mighty Paraguay.
All right, I look forward to that then. Excellent. That's all coming up in World Cup Daily late on Sunday, or possibly early on Monday. And thank you very much. In the meantime, Jacob, for joining us tonight.
Thank you, James.
And you too, Barry Glendinning.
Thanks.
Producer Ben, and you, the listener, bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.